You're listening to Björk Unraveled, a series that demystifies Björk's music one piece at a time. I'm your host, Savannah Wright. Björk's voice is a magnet. It can draw you in to the rest of her music, or it can repel you from even giving it a second listen. I've talked about what makes her voice unique in a previous episode, but today I want to get in the weeds a little bit. I want to discuss how and why her voice has changed over time. Now, if you're like me and you watch a lot of Björk videos on YouTube, then you've probably seen a video called, quote, "Vocal Coach Analyzes Björk, Vocal Health Discussion," unquote. It's by this voice teacher named Zach Ansley. Zach makes it very clear in his video that the reason he's talking about Björk's voice is because he wants to talk about vocal health. According to him, Björk, at least in her early career, was the epitome of vocal recklessness. Zach points out that she does all sorts of things that can harm her long-term vocal health, like shrieks and rasps and, quote, "hard glottal onsets," which for voice teachers is a big no-no. Zach stresses over and over that he's analyzing her voice purely from a vocal health perspective. It's not about her artistry or the message she's trying to convey. He simply wants to point out that these techniques can damage your voice. Singers, beware. I get where he's coming from. He's a vocal teacher, and encouraging vocal health is part of his agenda. But I also think that when it comes to Björk, you can't separate vocal technique from artistry. Because all those things he points out, the shrieks, the rasps, the growls, are what makes Björk's voice her own. And in this episode, I'll talk about the advantages and consequences of Björk's unique singing style. A listener and fellow Björk fan named Simone Mejia helps me with this episode. And we'll each talk about how Björk's voice has evolved, why it's changed, and how we as fans can embrace those changes. To even begin talking about Björk's voice, we need to establish two foundational ideas. One, Björk uses her voice as an instrument. If you want to know more about the why and how of that, you should listen to the third episode of Björk Unraveled. It's called Unlocking the Full Björkestra. It suffices to say that, for the majority of her career, Björk has cared more about using her voice to express an emotion or add sonic texture than to sound pretty or technically perfect.
She learned to sing out, you know, in the Icelandic wilderness. You know, she would say that she would just go on these hikes and, you know, respond to the elements with her voice and keeping her company and sort of claiming the space with it.
That's Simone Mejia. He's a Björk fan who spent a lot of time thinking about her voice. And this episode's topic was actually his idea.
She was by no means a technically trained singer. And actually, I don't think she could have developed that voice of hers had she received more vocal education in her youth.
So maybe because Björk grew up using her voice to respond to nature, she didn't care about singing the right way. It was more about expressing herself. But there's another reason her voice was so adventurous. Before she was an avant-garde pop artist, Björk was a punk singer. And I have a feeling her disregard for technique stems from her punk origins. Vocals in punk music are about showing your emotion, whether that's rage, disgust, or contempt. Punks care more about delivering their message than being technically sound. In a 2011 interview, Björk seemed to confirm this idea. She said, quote, "I was really punk, anti-technique, always."
Here, you know, she's already showing this like very wide vocal range. You know, she has an easiness for high belts, and she can transition very easily into the soprano head voice, you know, and that's something that we see a lot in this era.
When Simone mentions her head voice, he's talking about the notes at the top of her range. There's some science to that term, but I'm not going to go into it here. Instead, let's listen to the chorus from Birthday by the Sugar Cubes. You'll hear Björk transition seamlessly from a loud belt to her head voice. Ah! Ah! While Björk's voice has certainly changed since her punk days, her philosophy didn't for much of her career. Here's what she said in a 2012 interview with New York Magazine. Quote, "I work more with the left side of my brain, but my voice has always been very right brain. I didn't try to analyze it at all. I didn't want to let the academic side into that. I worried the mystery would go." Close quote. Simone thinks Björk's voice can be broken into three eras, with her punk days marking the first era. The next era, he says, came when she started her solo career. A lot of people refer to this period, from the 90s to the early 2000s, as her quote-unquote vocal peak.
You know, she has established her signature vocal improvs and styles, you know, how she goes for scales, how she improvises in between melodies, and she kind of still has the same range and the same tessitura that she did. The tessitura refers to the comfort zone of the voice. And she still has kind of like the same qualities that she did when she started at the band. Here we see her kind of like emblematic high chest notes, you know, the belts in the fifth octave. And she also transitions very easily into the head voice. She would say that she didn't even warm up her voice, you know, for concerts, because quote unquote singing is like sex, you know, and you don't rehearse for sex. That's just a testament of how resistant her vocal cords were at the time. You know, she was lucky in sort of like having these vocal cords of steel that could endure all this heavy singing and this high intensity, you know, of concerts with very little technique.
Björk created some truly wild sounds during that period, like the growls in 5 years. I'm so bored of cowards that say they want, then they can't endure. The screaming in Pluto. And who could forget the dolphin noises in It's Oh So Quiet. It's oh so still. Hello. We don't hear those sounds as much anymore, especially not the dolphin sounds. Because as much as I wish it weren't true, Björk's high-flying vocal tricks were unsustainable. In 2008, Björk lost her voice after the Volta tour. Simone pointed out that you can actually hear the warning signs of vocal fatigue if you listen to the Volta tour live album. Here's an example from Desired Constellation. How am I going to make this right? It's subtle, but Simone points out that slight break on How Am I Going To is a sign of inflammation from overuse. Here it is again. Listen carefully. How am I going to make this right? Björk still gave stunning performances on this tour. And to be fair, these were long sets. But for the sake of her long-term career, something had to change. Here's what she said about that period in a 2011 interview. Quote, "It was very scary. I didn't know if I would ever sing again. I saw several doctors in New York, singing teachers, voice specialists, osteopaths for singers. I said to myself, if my voice is really gone, tell me quickly and I will move on. There are so many things I want to do. Finally, my singing teacher told me that it was going to work out, that for 20 years I had been singing with bad technique. For 3 years now, I've been taking singing lessons and getting rid of nodules without surgery by stretching them, using a special technique. And then I completely changed my diet. Because of candida, a fungus that infected my throat and sinuses, I stopped eating sugar and flour. My voice slowly returned, and I decided to compose melodies that stuck to my new voice. While working on old songs to prepare for the Biophilia concerts, I discovered that I had regained the same, if not a greater vocal range than before. Close quote.
Her voice deepened somewhat, and she acquired a more metallic tone.
Here's Simone again.
She was better at sort of projecting her voice. It was more full, and the sound of it. And she strengthened her lower range, which had been kind of weak in the early years. But of course, it also compromised her high belting notes. You know, you see that many of those notes have disappeared, or they don't sound as easy, or they might be a little bit shouty sometimes. So this is all, of course, also a result of aging, which is, of course, natural.
Let's talk about that lower range, because to me, it seems like Björk favored her incredible upper range during the first half of her solo career, until she worked with a vocal coach and realized the power of this other side of her voice. On Biophilia, you hear that lower range in the song Dark Matter. This song has no lyrics and a very loose form, and I think that shows one of the benefits of Björk expanding her range. She doesn't fall back on familiar melodies, but instead pushes herself to explore more. But for me, the most beautiful example of her lower range on Biophilia is the song Sacrifice. Sacrifice is the one song that doesn't seem to fit the natural phenomenon pattern of Biophilia. It's not about the moon, earthquakes, or viruses. Björk said the song is actually about complaining. Quote, "It is really the odd one out. A couple of years ago, I spent 8 months in Puerto Rico. I rented a house on the beach. While I was there, five of my friends, couples, divorced. Maybe because all the other songs are about elements, I guess I became an anthropologist and decided to write down in my book all the things that the girls were complaining about and all the things the guys were complaining about. The girls were all complaining about very similar things, so I ended up picking out sentences that they all had in common and skipping what they had different," unquote. The lower pitch of Sacrifice mirrors the gloom these women feel. Honestly, if I can jump ahead a little bit, hearing this theme in this low register feels like a precursor to Victimhood from Fasora, especially when you learn that Björk's personal brand of victimhood is self-sacrifice. She must the world for you. Now she's poisoned by demons. You cannot... Okay. I want to go back to that quote from Björk that I read earlier, about how she responded when she lost her voice after the Volta tour. Quote, "Because of Candida, a fungus that infected my throat and sinuses, I stopped eating sugar and flour. My voice slowly returned, and I decided to compose melodies that stuck to my new voice." Unquote. We just discussed how the Candida infection influenced the sonic palette of Biophilia, because it encouraged Björk to experiment with her lower range. But Candida also inspired a defining visual aspect of the record. You know that enormous, fluffy copper wig that Björk wears on the cover? Well, copper itself eliminates Candida, and that's why this color became a part of the visuals. Through both her melodies and the album's iconography, Björk turned a potential liability, her Candida infection, into a strength. And this recovery period culminated in Biophilia Live, which Simone called
Björk at her most technical and vocally healthy. Heaven, heaven's bodies whirl around me, make me wonder, and they say...
Unfortunately, however, Björk wasn't out of the woods. On April 25th, 2012, Sonar Sao Paulo, where Björk was scheduled to perform one of her Biophilia shows, announced that her set would be cancelled. Here's what the announcement said.
"After medical studies were performed, Bjork's specialist doctor advised her immediate rest of her voice due to an inflamed nodule. Following Bjork having to cancel two shows in Argentina when this condition emerged, it is on doctor's advice too soon to try and sing again, as this could bring permanent damage to her voice. Even though Bjork wants to perform, she won't be able to continue with the show.
This time, Bjork couldn't just work with a vocal coach to repair the nodules. She needed to have laser surgery to get some polyps removed. Polyps are fluid-filled lesions on the vocal fold. They aren't cancerous, but they do compromise your voice. So, Bjork underwent surgery to remove the polyps, and it was a success. She didn't lose her voice. But her voice wasn't quite the same. It reportedly decreased her upper range, but it also increased her lower range. I'll admit, I didn't notice that much of a difference in her voice between the Biophilia and Vulnicura tours. Not that I was there, but at least from the live album standpoint, she sounds pretty much the same to my ears. I think more fans noticed the change in the Utopia Cornucopia tours, and in Bjork Orchestral. Like, some fans were disappointed that she couldn't hit a few of the high notes in Sun in My Mouth. This and other moments led some fans to panic and ask, are the best days of Bjork's voice behind us? Well, let me tell you, they're not. And also, let's not be short-sighted here. Some of those things we heard I chalk up to nerves and a lack of rehearsal. After all, she hadn't toured for 2 years before Bjork Orchestral, and that can definitely affect her performance. Plus, as Simone points out, pitching a song down for a live performance is totally normal.
Nowadays, she lowers the key to many songs, you know, like in Bachelorette or Hype Ballad. But she's still singing a lot of the old songs in the original key, which is also, you know, quite surprising. You know, she sings Hunter, she sings Yoga in the same key, and those songs have like high built-in notes, and she's still aiming for those notes live. So overall, I don't see, you know, why it should be an issue. You know, it's totally normal for singers to lower the key of their songs as they age, and you know, as long as the vocal delivery stays true to the essence of the song, I don't see a problem with it. So I can feel happier to be safe again with you. I go through all this before you wake. As a fan who has followed her for a long time, I really admire the fact that she has kept it real with her voice. You know, she, for example, she uses a microphone that is like very hi-fi, that reveals everything. You know, she's not hiding. You can hear the cracks, you can hear the crisp, you can hear even the mucus in the voice.
Show me, forgiveness for having lost faith.
And you know, that's a kind of like a testament of who she is as a singer. And she's not kind of like pretending to be a vocalist of the past, you know. She's singing with the voice she has right now.
Like Simone said, some of the changes we're hearing in Bjork's voice stem from age, and this is a natural evolution. Bjork recently celebrated her 57th birthday. In all likelihood, she has transitioned through menopause, and an early study on the effect of menopause on the voice reported that nearly half of women experience vocal changes. These changes might include loss of certain frequencies, reduced vocal endurance, and reduced efficiency in muscle coordination, which causes pitch inaccuracies. For vocalists who are used to hitting certain notes with ease, these symptoms can be frustrating to deal with. Obviously, I can't comment on how menopause has directly affected Bjork's voice, and it's beside the point, because what I'm getting at is this. The effects of aging on the voice are completely normal. Here's Simone again.
singers, like all human beings, go through hormonal changes and wear and tear, and you have to pay a higher price for using your voice, a part of your body as an instrument. And she has actually talked about this, you know, in songs like Mouth Mantra. She says that she has had to sacrifice to pay a price for the things she's been able to do with those pipes. And yeah, that's the paradox of singing, right?
But rather than mourn the loss of her high range, Björk has decided to embrace her low range. In a recent interview for another magazine, she said, quote, "Each album is always different. I like voices that sound older and deeper. You lose some notes, but you gain some notes too. In each album, I tried to work with what I had in that moment, not with what I had 10 years ago." Close quote. In the case of Fasora, which literally means she who digs, Björk dug deep into her vocal range. An obvious example is in Victimhood, where the lower notes add to that feeling of being trapped. Another example is the opening of Fungal City. Fungal City, subterranean. She goes pretty low on the word subterranean, which reflects her physical descent into the city. Then there's Ancestress. When she hits an emotional low point during the bridge, her vocals also go deeper. And then it didn't. In each case, these lower notes add sonic texture and strengthen the story of the lyrics. But apart from experimenting with her lower range, I also find Björk experimenting with different styles of singing, like the half-talking, half-singing you hear in traditional Icelandic folk music. We heard this style in early tracks too, like Human Behavior, It's Oh So Quiet, and Vertebrae by Vertebrae. And the And post-surgery, I noticed it in songs like Family and Features Creatures. I literally think I am 5 minutes away from love. One explanation is that this style of singing is less demanding on her voice. But it might also just suit her storytelling, which has changed and evolved just as much as her voice over the years. Björk is adapting to her voice as it changes, and by continuing to perform, she's defying the ageism that plagues the music industry, particularly for female performers. The sad truth is, it's very difficult for female singers over the age of 40 to maintain their popularity and critical relevancy. It's gotten better over the years, Beyonce, I'm looking at you, but it's still a problem. And although Björk might not consider it revolutionary to sing with an older voice, it kind of is. She's a trailblazer. I know there are a lot of Björk fans out there who cling to her early albums. They think she hasn't made a great record since Vespertine or Medulla. They mourn that her voice doesn't sound the same, that she can't quite hit the high notes of Post or Homogenic. They might even blame her unconventional singing technique for this loss. After all, it created the stress on her vocal cords that ultimately led to surgery. But why do we value one sound over the other? Why do we prize the high belts of Bachelorette over the low, rich sounds of Victimhood? Why do we prize the voice of a young singer over that of an older one? Can't we find beauty in both? Björk is writing some of her most musically complex and psychologically interesting work in her 50s. She's learned to embrace her new range, and so should we. There's this online survey from a few years ago that found that the average Björk fan is a 20-year-old Mexican gay guy. I've already examined why Björk's music is beloved by the LGBTQ+ community, but I haven't yet explored the other side of the equation. Why do Mexican listeners identify with her music? Why did Atopos enter at number 6 on Mexico's iTunes charts when it didn't even crack the top 50 in the US? In the next episode, I'll get to the bottom of that question, with some help from my Mexican listeners. And yes, that means another episode in Spanish. You've been listening to Björk Unraveled, a series that demystifies Björk's music one piece at a time. Björk Unraveled is produced independently by me, Savannah Wright. Special thanks to Simon Mejia for helping me develop this episode idea, and to Isaac Wright for lending his voice. If you liked this episode, please share it with a friend and submit a review on whatever podcast app you're using. And consider donating to the show. There's a link in the show notes where you can make a monthly or one-time donation. I'm an independent producer, so every dollar will go towards music, software, and equipment. This episode was brought to you by Javier Villegas and Tobias Senesen. If you have an idea for a future episode, tell me about it. You can find me on Instagram at Björk Unraveled or email me björkunraveled@gmail.com. I'm Savannah Wright. Thanks for listening.